Welcome to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. This podcast is for self-employed business owners just like you, who really want to grow their business and become successful and profitable, but without all the stress and hassle. I want to share my 30 years of business experience to show you how simple it can be to earn more money and how you can get organized without needing a business degree or any other qualifications. I'll be talking about the easy steps that you can put in place right now to start earning more money today and to help you get the business that you deserve and dream of. Without further ado, let's get started. This week's podcast is sponsored by Pocket PA, helping self-employed business owners to get organized, understand their finances, and do their accounts all in one place using a powerful online tool. If you're serious about making a profit and having a successful business, then using a simple digital web app like Pocket PA is the best way to grow and scale your business. Visit pocketpa.com for more details and start managing your money like a pro today. Hello and welcome to the Earn More, Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. Today, I'm talking with Lucy Rennie. Now, she's a communications expert for small business owners about the juicy topic of how clarity can massively help you and to allow better communication, which in turn creates better connections. Now, Lucy has recently had her book published and she started her own podcast. So I'm really excited to chat with her today so that she can explain how she helps small business owners with their messaging. So Lucy, thank you for joining us. Hello and welcome.
Hi, Caro. Thank you. It's brilliant to be here today. Thank you.
Good, good. Now, I'd love you to share with us your journey on how you reached these lofty heights of writing a book and how you've got to work with small business owners. So would you just share some of that with us?
Yeah, absolutely. It's a funny one, actually, and probably one that most people won't imagine, but it started off it started off when I moved to France as part of my degree, and I was doing French and business at uni and had to go out for a year over there. But I actually ended up working over there in a bar, running an Irish bar, meeting lots of people, and just really fell in love with the country and the people and the lifestyle. And so pretty much following my graduation, moved straight out there, not really knowing what I wanted to do. And to be honest, I probably don't really know what I want to do when I grow up now, if I'm honest, even though I'm 44. But it kind of, it was one of those where I knew I loved people. I knew I loved working in business. I knew I loved culture and relationships and languages. And so I actually ended up in the beginning working for a consulting company, which worked with big organizations like Airbus or Scania Trucks or Alcoa, that kind of thing. And it was about helping them to, I suppose, work more effectively, cross cultures with different nationalities, different people, how to kind of work together. So my first role really was at Airbus. And it was at the time when they were making, you know, the A380, which is the massive plane. It was at the time, yeah, it's ginormous. And it was at the time when it hadn't been launched yet and they were actually making different parts in different countries. So I was working in the French offices and my role was to help the French teams communicate effectively with the English teams, making the wings, or with the German team and kind of getting them all together. And yeah, it was really interesting, actually. I mean, just from kind of culturally, the fact that the French would stop at 12 o'clock and everyone have a 2-hour lunch when, you know, where the English would be kind of like, oh, come on, we need to get this done. We want to get home kind of thing. That was how it started. And I was working with different businesses like that and ended up working for a big steel company, Arcelor. And they eventually headhunted me and I went in to work with the CEO in France as his kind of PA, executive assistant, right hand man, I suppose, at the time, to help him manage his business. But because really he had to do everything in English and he couldn't speak English, so my role was really, again, to help him communicate that way. But that's how I ended up working in the steel industry. And eventually, 10 years later, I moved my way up through the ranks. And at the end of it, I was head of communications for about 360 different sites all around the world, helping the managers and the teams to, communicate effectively internally, to make sure the teams were engaged, that they were motivated, they knew what was going on, but also externally with their clients. So it was helping them with the PR strategies, the marketing and things like that.
And what were some of the insights that you found in those communications between different teams and things? Was it, were there a lot of crossed wires often, or did you find that there were problems that people had through communication?
Yeah, 100%. I think there's crossed wires and all sorts of problems everywhere, if I'm honest. And I think that's the thing that I, which has driven what I'm doing today. But for me, everything comes down to communication. And it, I think a lot of the time we try and overcomplicate things, whereas actually if we can really learn to keep it stripped back and really focus on the principles and what we're trying to communicate, it makes a massive difference. So at the time, yeah, there was all sorts of issues, whether that was between the managers and the teams on the ground, or whether it was between different countries or different markets. There was all sorts of things that were going on. So yeah, really helping them to do that effectively was what I was doing.
And one of the things that I'm curious about is where the lines of communication actually get across and sort of misunderstood. Do you think it happens more in the written word, in emails perhaps, or do you think spoken words, do you think the intonation and things has more liability associated with it? Because I certainly know when I'm texting or emailing things, certainly things can be interpreted differently by people that are reading it to what it's intended to be. So I do wonder sometimes where miscommunications happen and whether it happens more with the spoken word or the written word. What are your thoughts on that, Lucy?
Yeah, such an interesting question. And do you know what? I think it probably happens equally in both. I think we've got a tendency today with email to be kind of quick, snappy. We're sending quick messages and things can be taken in the wrong way. So because we can't hear the tone of voice, we can't see the body language, we can't see the sort of the hidden language that you know, should be coming across in communication. But equally, when we're face-to-face, there could be all sorts of different barriers that are there, miscommunication, because we're not necessarily ultimately putting ourselves in someone else's shoes and thinking about their perspective and where they're coming from and what they're feeling. I know one of the campaigns I worked on a while ago now, but it was exactly that. It was at the time when, do you remember BlackBerries?
Yes, a long time ago.
Yeah, so I'm showing my age now, but it was kind of this new thing that meant that all these kind of managers, and they were guys, you know, I was pretty much the only woman at the time working there, but they all had these new BlackBerry phones. And so they'd be out and about traveling and then sending emails to their teams who were, you know, in the offices. But because it was email and because they were fast paced, they were sort of sending these commands and forgetting that actually there was a human being behind that email. So there was no kind of hello, how are you, what are you doing, no thank yous, no please, no any. It was just kind of, and so obviously that created this massive barrier of resentment between these two populations, when actually they weren't necessarily meaning, it wasn't intentional, it was just they were in this zone of quick, let's do this, action it, and it just caused all sorts of issues. So yeah,
I think I have to say here, I'm guilty of that actually myself. And I think that's not even a man thing. I just literally forget to put all the niceties at the beginning. And so 9 times out of 10, if I am in a hurry, I will just literally cut straight to the quick and answer in that sort of reply mode. And I won't put a hello, how are you doing? Whereas other people are so good at doing that. And I'm so absent when I do that. So I do know that that isn't just a man thing, unfortunately. That's just a like busy person syndrome, yeah. I think sometimes. But yeah, I often have to write a message and then think, whoa, 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 stop, don't press send. Go back and start by saying hello, or put something like, how are you doing? Or I hope you're well. And I always put that in right at the end before I actually press the send, rather than putting it in and then think, oh, now what is it I need to say? And I'm really guilty of that. And, you know, I think also with these day and ages with emojis and people writing in capitals, sometimes I've literally just hit the caps lock by accident, but that's like then seen as this shouting. And so I'm just like, oh my God, too late, I've sent it now. And then you can't retrieve it. And you can get yourself in a real pickle with emails and things like that. And also full stop seem to be a big thing these days. If you put full stop, I heard somebody saying the other day, oh, she was full stopping me. And I thought, oh gosh, I'd recorded by Siri and it literally put the full stops in for punctuation. And I wasn't full stopping anybody. But these modern things that happen and how they're interpreted really do have huge scope for miscommunication between people. And it can be really a stressful thing, just trying to communicate effectively with people and upsetting people in that way. I really noticed that recently.
Yeah, no, do you know what? That's so true. And it resonates, because it's tricky to know, because there's rules here and there's rules there. And then I think sometimes as a woman, you get this, I think for women in business, sometimes we get told we're too nice and too friendly, and actually we should make our emails less friendly and kind of a bit more blunt and da da da, because that shows that we're not, I don't know, we're more in control. For me, genuinely, I think it's all about people. We forget business is all about people and relationships. And actually, the more, I think, to take the pressure off, the more you can just be you. So if it's you, then you would naturally ask a question or get to know people or add those emojis in or whatever, then do it. If it's not, then that's okay too. But just be aware of thinking about a little bit about how you're doing it, and just making sure that actually on the other side, people are engaging in the right way, I think. But genuinely, I think it's all about being you naturally and creating those relationships. And I think, you know, if you were face to face or sitting in a pub, you'd be asking questions, wouldn't you? You'd be kind of creating that rapport. And you can do the same kind of thing over email or text or whatever. It's just a different way of doing it, but it will still have the same impact in terms of creating that relationship. So, yeah.
I think there's also that question about that X, that kiss at the end of a message. Should you or shouldn't you? Do you or don't you? Is that just a woman thing? Am I not coming across as friendly? If I do that, am I not businesslike? Is that unprofessional? I find that whole X at the end of a message so problematic. What's your thoughts on that? Is that a generational thing, Lucy? Or what's the word on the street that should be going on with the X at the end of a message?
Oh, it's so funny.
I probably shouldn't even be admitting this on a podcast, but I was listening to I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. And I heard Chris Moyles talking about it with one of the other guys going, of course you put an X on the end of it. Of course you do. I was thinking, oh God, that's what guys are talking about in the jungle. So I shouldn't be worrying about putting an X on. But then is it very businessy? Yeah.
No, I'm with you 100%. And you know what? I've done it sometimes where I think because when I'm pinging a message to my husband, it automatically comes up X you, so love you. And I've actually sent clients texts going, love you at the end of it. So I've been there and I know exactly what you mean. But I genuinely, as I go on and I'm working with more and more business owners and really kind of seeing the impact of it, again, if it's something you naturally do, then put a kiss on it. Who's to say that that's not what business should be? Because it's about you and who you are. And the more you can be yourself, the more genuinely I think that you're going to attract and work with the right kind of people that feel good for you. So I say sod the rules. Sorry if I can say that on your podcast, but be more you and own it. And just, you know, if you want to put a kiss at the end of it, then that's absolutely fine. I think just be prepared for, you know, the reaction if you get one, and that's it.
I feel like I've got permission now from a communications expert. So thank you for that.
Absolutely.
So literally, we were at your story. I'm so sorry I interrupted. So just carry on with where you were about what brought you then into self-employment, because I know that's a huge step, particularly from obviously a really successful corporate career.
Yeah, it's interesting. So I was in Luxembourg in 2009, and for various reasons, I'd kind of decided, you know what, maybe this wasn't the right thing for me anymore. And I won't go into the detail of it all, but I actually managed to move back to the UK, so back home, but kept my job in Luxembourg. So I did that for 5 years, working from home, but then flying out every Monday to a different site around the world, speaking different languages and working with different teams. And it was then when I'd moved back home that I met my husband, and in 2014 was pregnant, had my daughter, Elia, which was the big kind of milestone for me. Was, you know, I loved my career. I loved flying. I loved meeting people. It was, you know, it was exciting. It was, you know, everything you can imagine. But at the same time, I was really looking forward to being a mum, and I really wanted to make sure that, you know, I could be there. I didn't want to be one of those mums that, for me personally, that wasn't present 100%. So it was kind of right, okay, what can I do? What do I need to do? And so managed to negotiate a redundancy, which gave me a bit of security blanket to take some proper time off. And it's so interesting because me being me, yes, I loved being a mum and it's the best job in the world, but I still had that niggle going, right, what am I going to do now? What can I do now? Oh, what's, you know, where can I go and kind of what's next? And so, yeah, that's when, because I've got this sort of security blanket, it was a perfect opportunity that if I was ever going to start my own business, it was then, because I had a bit of a buffer. So I sort of looked around at what I was doing, and I genuinely loved my job. It was communications, it was marketing, it was getting under the skin of, even though it was the same group, because I think at the time there was 360,000 employees in the, you know, it's the biggest steel and mining company in the world. Even though that, it was actually like working with lots of different small businesses, because they were in different countries, different cultures, different ways of working. And so I kind of thought to myself, well, do you know what? Actually, when I looked at the UK and what was going on, especially in the High Peak and where I live in Derbyshire, there was marketing agencies, there were PR agencies. But small businesses, there was no one really could help them with strategy and really about communication, which isn't just about marketing. It's about fixing that leaky bucket. It's about doing things in the right way and managing expectations and all those things. And so that's what I set up, was I decided that maybe I could create something where I could almost work like I was working previously in my corporate role, but for small business owners. And so that's what I set up 7 years ago now. And yeah, been going ever since, really, where I have lots of different clients who are from a micro one-man band right up to, you know, 5, 10, 15 million pound businesses, where they've not necessarily got those resources in-house, but they need that expertise. So I work with them, I partner with the businesses, with the business owners, and then help the teams in-house to actually implement the strategy. And it's there where we can look holistically at how they should build and grow their business. And that's where my communication skills and marketing experience comes in as well. So yeah.
That's amazing. And can I just ask, with those solo business owners that you work with, do the majority of them have ambitions to grow and become bigger companies to have people, or are they very happy with where they are just being a solo business owner? Because the solo business owners, the ones that I speak to, so many of them love that freedom of no responsibility, and they don't actually aspire always to become bigger, to have premises and offices or places of work where they then have to pay a lot of overheads and to then have responsibility of employees and that sort of thing. That actually isn't where they're wanting to go. They do want to grow their business so that it's really full and prosperous and they're making a really good living from it, but they don't always have that plan to get bigger. Do you find that with your small business owners as well?
Yeah. Do you know what? That's something that's really niggled me since I started the business, my business, was this outside pressure all the time of society, and kind of, you know, when you launch a business, is to scale, to grow, to get bigger, and that's what success looks like. You've got to keep going and get investment and recruit and da da da. And if I'm honest, I mean, it's part of my book. The whole ethos of my book is actually we should be building a business in a way that works for us and feels good for you. And that can be in any way, you know, that you choose, but one that fits in with your lifestyle, with your ambition, the way you want to work, whether you want that. Some people get a thrill from taking on that risk and that responsibility, and that's fine. But other people, actually, it's about lifestyle and creating that security and that way of life. So yeah, I work with a lot. I have a membership club and a community of lots of small business owners who are one-man bands, who are really happy just doing that and are just about actually adding value, creating a life that they like, but actually really enjoying what they do. Because that's the part of it, isn't it? When you start making it into a machine, that's when sometimes you can take the fun away and it becomes this monster that actually you hadn't really set out to work with or to do. So yeah, I'm with you on
that. I 100% agree that there are external pressures, presuming that bigger is better, and actually you can be small and mighty. And I really, really, and you know, love championing that small solo business owner that, you know, yes, it can be lonely at times. Yes, you are doing everything by yourself, which is really important, why you need systems and processes to help leverage your time and for you to have a very clear strategy as to where you're going. But as to what success looks like, it doesn't mean having a, you know, a multi-million pound corporation. Those responsibilities that come with it is not everybody's aspirations. And having the freedom to be able to choose your hours, your day-to-day, who your clients are, how you want to run your business, when you take your holidays, all of those things. Yes, there's a flip side. You're obviously, you know, working by yourself and you have your own pressures and responsibilities, and you know, that's a whole other story. But the actual freedom that comes with just being that solo business owner is immense, and I don't think we should ever underestimate what that gives people, and that empowering feeling, knowing that everything they're creating is all under their umbrella.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree with you more. It's quantity, it's quality over quantity. And I think the more you can do that, the more value you're going to create anyway, because you're coming from a good place and you're doing, you know, you're building value. Like you said, with systems and processes, I mean, that's my whole, I suppose my framework is about future-proofing your business. And so it's all about getting those solid foundations in place so that actually then everything can fall into place. It gets easier and you can kind of then create the business that you want to create in your way. So yeah, 100% with you on that too.
So could you just explain a little bit more? I haven't heard that word before, and probably a lot of the listeners won't know what future-proofing your business looks like. If you are a small business owner and you just work by yourself for yourself, what is future-proofing your business? What would they be doing, Lucy?
Such a good question. No, I think it's something that I've realized that, again, it follows on from what we're talking about. So for me, the best way to build a business, the best way to go about it is to create something that's sustainable, which means that it keeps on giving and that it's there because you've got the foundations in place, because you've got the systems in place. Actually, it gets not easier as you go on, but actually it's durable. And so for me, if you can future-proof your business, which means creating something sustainable, but also something that means that it's in a place, it's in a position so that it can withstand anything that's thrown at it, any challenges that come in its way, or anything that's kind of uncertainty or the rocky road. And, you know, we live in a world now where it's typically uncertain, isn't it? It's a VUCA world with volatility. You know, we've had the pandemic, we've had lockdown, we've got a war going on in Ukraine, we've got recession, we've got, so we have to kind of be resilient with that. And so for me, the idea of future-proofing your business doesn't mean scaling it and being, you know, what we're talking about. It's about just being in a place where you've not got that funny feeling at the bottom of your stomach feeling sick because you're not sure where the next payment's going to come from or if you can afford to pay your mortgage. It's about actually having that buffer in place and those systems in place so that you can sleep at night and you are in control and you're not shooting from the hip and feeling overwhelmed because everything's, you know, all these plates you're spinning. So that's really what I'm on a mission to do, is help small business owners, the tiniest to the largest, to really feel like they're in control and build something that works and that's going to keep on working for them, regardless of what's going on in the world.
I love that. And it's so obvious that you're passionate about what you do. And I think that that's the really good fit with small business owners. They get to do something that they're passionate about, because when people do something that they love every single day, it doesn't feel so much like work. They feel really invested and they feel really purposeful and that they feel fulfilled. And at the end of the day, that is really, that's for me, is what success looks like. Feeling that you're making a difference, that you are doing something that you really love and enjoy. And the sweet spot is when you can actually monetize it and make a living from it in order for you to be able to have that continue on and on and on, because that's what fills your cup up, I think. And that's the sweet spot, when you match that, what you love doing, with being able to make enough money to have a good life and a good living. But certainly making your business durable is massively important. So making it durable and enjoyable, I think both of those things are vital. And with your book, I know, just tell us a little bit about your book that you've got, because you've chosen the title Clarity, Communication and Connections. Have I got that right? Yeah. All the C's.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it's based on my future-proof your business framework, which is clarity, communication and connection. And it's really three clear steps to future-proof your business. And it's really tying in everything that we've just talked about, because I think there's also a shift in the world now where the people in general are looking for something different from a business as well. So they're not looking necessarily to work with these big brands that are just about making profit. They want to work with businesses that stand for something, that care, that come from a value-led place. And so really what I'm trying to say is let's harness the power of that and create something that, you know, can last and that can feel good while we're doing it. So ultimately, it's all about creating the ripple effect. And what I mean by that is that in the best possible scenario, for me, if you're doing a really good job and you're delivering and you're creating amazing value and people love what you do, they're going to shout about you from the rooftops, and they're going to tell their friends and family, and they're going to tell their colleagues and their connections. And so they're going to basically market and promote your business themselves. So you don't have to do that, you know. So the best possible scenario is word of mouth marketing, where you can just keep going, doing a really good job, looking after everybody, and it'll market itself. And so to get to that place, we need to have three clear steps in place. So clarity, really clear on why you do what you do, because that's the bit when you were talking there, your eyes lit up. That's the bit people connect with, isn't it? Why they've started the business, why they do what they do, why it's important to them. And then really understanding how you add value and who you're working with, so that you've got clarity on that, and you can then start to communicate what that is, tell those stories, and connect with the right kind of people. Communication, so, is obviously about telling your stories and getting it out there, but it's also about fixing that leaky bucket. And we talked about this before, but I think for me, people in this day and age spend so much money on filling that top pipeline, filling, you know, the top of the funnel to get new people in. Whereas actually, if we really looked after the people who already, you know, have engaged and bought from us, then they're going to stay with us longer and they're going to shout about us more. So that's the retention. And actually, you know, the more we can look after those people, the more they're going to buy from us. So it's ultimately communicating, which is the key to it all, expectations, looking after them, and then just telling stories. But I talk about it in the book about having sort of, you know, Yoda moments. So telling your clients stories, you know, and promoting them, but you're kind of the guide behind them of how you've done that. And that's really important. And then finally, the connection part.
I just love it how you really encourage people to show their personality. And I think, you know, once you show that unique personality, particularly if you're a small business owner, it's important that you put that stamp of your own business and you do feel loud and proud about being yourself and that you do feel comfortable, because I think that promotes that authenticity, and people resonate much more when they recognize and see that authenticity and the real person. And there's so many cookie cutter approaches to, oh, you know, trying to be the same as everyone else. But in fact, it's those unique differences that set your business apart and help to, you know, make it more successful, because you feel comfortable with what you're doing. And it's just like that whole ripple effect that you were talking about. I think that's really vital.
Yeah. And you know what? I think it's the hardest thing in the world to do that. Genuinely, it's the hardest thing in the world to find out who you are and then actually put yourself out. I think it's Dolly Parton's got the quote, hasn't she? Something like, find out who you are and then do it on purpose. And I think actually, you know, it's taken me 44 years to finally feel comfortable enough to kind of get out here and shout about what I believe in. And I think, but the more you can do that, the more you can be the face to your brand, the more you can really let people in as to why you do what you do and why you care and why it's important, the more it's going to work, because they're going to see that you care and they want to help you and support you, but also they want to buy from you because you're the one who really gives a monkeys about it. So it's the hardest thing, but I think when you can really do that, it's important. And I think from a consumer's perspective, when you look at how you interact with brands before you engage and buy from them, you always kind of want to know who is it behind the brand, who am I actually dealing with, and who, you know, and because we want to trust them. And we can't trust somebody enough to buy from them if we don't know who they are and why they're doing what they're doing. So it is really, really important. It's the essence of everything, I believe. And that's the bit that then helps you with the connections, which is then reaching out. And, you know, I talk about the TripAdvisor effect, which is actually where we don't necessarily believe in advertising anymore. When we want to, you know, engage in something, if we wanted to buy a new product or service like Pocket PA, we want to hear what other people have, you know, how they've experienced it. What do they think about it? So it's reviews, it's testimonials, it's recommendations. And when we can tap into that, then actually, you know, I think it's 84% of all B2B businesses, whenever they're looking for a new product or service, they ask for a referral. So before they're Googling that, or before they're going on TikTok or Facebook, they're actually asking their friends and their colleagues, do you know someone who could recommend this? Or, do you know, where should I go here? Which is huge. And I think sometimes as small business owners, we get so caught up in these new trends and spending money here and this marketing funnel. And don't get me wrong, I'm not saying there's not a place for that. But actually, the essence, the real organic, sustainable way of doing it is through people and asking for recommendations. Because if someone that you trust already says they've done a really good job, you're more likely to go with them than someone that you found on Google. So it's that kind of final part of the puzzle where we can really harness that power of connections, of tapping into those referrals and recommendations and reviews that start the process of the ripple effect, which is the sustainable part of future-proofing your business.
Yeah, I think once you've got that clarity and you're starting to communicate it and people are recognizing that authenticity, I think it really starts to build your own confidence in yourself and in your business. And then it's that really, you know, it's not the vicious circle, but it's the, what's the opposite of the vicious circle? It's where you kind of like start expanding exponentially and, you know, blooming.
Absolutely.
Know, when things go into a downward spiral, everything gets worse and worse, but it's the opposite of that. It's like when you get your confidence, everything starts to fall into place, and you know, you really start to exponentially grow into that next phase. But that comes with, yes, knowing yourself, having that clarity, communicating it effectively, and all of those things. So perfect, Lucy, that's so good. And I know, obviously, I'm going to leave a link to your book, but what's the best way for people if they want to get in touch with you and they'd like to work with you, or they're interested in finding out more about you, Lucy, where should they go?
Oh, thanks, Cara. Yeah, I think probably the easiest place is just to come to iamlucyrennie.com, where you can find links to my free group, my book, my podcast, and how to work with me. But there's also loads of free resources on there and tips and tricks and things to help you to get started on that process of future-proofing your business.
Perfect. Thank you. What a great More Stress, Less episode this week, hearing from Lucy today. Thank you for listening. I hope you have a wonderful week ahead. You earn lots of lovely money with the least amount of stress. And until next time, let's catch up soon.
Thanks for listening to the Earn More Stress Less podcast with me, Caro Sison. If you've enjoyed this week's episode, then do hit subscribe so we can catch up again soon. And please kindly leave a review if you've got a moment, and share with anyone else that you think this podcast could help on their self-employed journey. If you're ready to make bigger breakthroughs in your business life and want to get way more organized and understand your finances the really simple way, then start your very own 14-day free trial today using the super powerful software tool Pocket PA that I made for my own son and daughter. Go to pocketpa.com/podcast and let's get you on the way to earning more money and stressing much less. Have a great week, whatever you're doing.